The Equity Foundation is the professional development arm of MIA Equity and Equity New Zealand. Each year, the Equity Foundation delivers more than 100 masterclasses, workshops, film screenings, In Conversations, international scholarships and on-set internships free of charge for Equity members. We give our thanks to our principal sponsor, Media Super.
So, good morning. Hi, as you know, my name is Alex Jones. My pronouns are she and her, and I'm the program manager at the Equity Foundation. And today I have the pleasure in introducing our special guests, Daisy Hicks and Monica Sayers. Before we commence, I would like to acknowledge the Gadigal people of the Eora Nations and pay my respects to all the traditional owners of country and all throughout our country, and recognise their continuing connection to land, waters, and culture, and that this always was and always will be Aboriginal land. And we pay our respects to elders past and present. I want to take a minute to thank the Equity Foundation's principal sponsor, Media Super. Media Super has supported the Foundation since our beginning in the early 2000s. They are your industry super fund, and they can help you with your superannuation and really provide you with good basis for building your superannuation and also provide you with financial advice. So don't hesitate to contact them. And if you don't have their details, contact me and I can put you in contact with the right person. We will have a Q&A at the end of the session. So you may want to wait to put your questions in the chat section. And depending on time, I can spotlight you and read on your behalf if you prefer that. Before I hand over to Daisy and Monica, I want to let you know that there will be a members meeting about unauthorized AI usage for voiceover artists next Thursday, February the 15th. It's in response to a recent YouTube animation which used artificially generated voiceovers from a pre-recorded material submitted by members. So it's something that is obviously an issue, and voiceover members are very encouraged to take part. I'll be sending something out to you afterwards, and I'll include the details in the Zoom link in then. Okay, so Daisy and Monica, thank you so much.
Hello, thank you, Alex. Welcome, everyone. My name is Monica Sayers. I'm coming to you from Bidjigal land, and my pronouns are she, her. And Daisy, I'll get you to introduce yourself. Gorgeous.
Hello, Daisy. My name is Daisy Hicks. My pronouns are she, her. I'm currently in London in the United Kingdom, but I usually live and work on Gadigal land.
Wonderful. Thank you. So let's jump straight into it. I'd like to know, how did you get into casting, and is there a particular part of it that you love the most?
Oof, I wish it was a really like romantic story or a fancy story, but I honestly just saw a job someone posted a link on Facebook back in 2012, I believe, and it tagging a friend saying, "Hey, this job sounds like it could be for you, friend." And I, just because I'm snoopy, I looked at the link, and it was for an office assistant in a casting office. And I sort of read the job description, and I thought, oh, that sounds like, it's like, I know how casting works, because I was an actor 100,000 years ago. And I sort of said, oh yeah, I'll give it a go. And I sent them my CV, and they got back to me. And that office was IFA Casting, that was based out of Fox Studios for like 25 years. I could be wrong. I could be mixing those dates a little. And I was really terrible. I was a terrible office assistant. I nearly got fired. I was really bored. And I really wasn't sure what I wanted to do and if photocopying and getting coffee was for me. And so I just happened to come across this documentary called Every Little Step, which is about it's on Apple TV if you'd like to buy it or rent it. And it's about the remount of the revival of A Chorus Line on Broadway. And I watched that and I went, oh my God, that's what I want to do. And the next day I went into IFA Casting, who were probably like very much preparing my like release details and get it to get rid of me. And I did a PowerPoint presentation of my 5-year plan for my career. And so, you know, I wanted to work my way up to becoming a casting director. And they sort of said, okay, mate, like, give it a go. We'll support you. And I really hustled. I'm really proud to say I worked really, really hard. I really, you know, I found the things that I was passionate about and the things that the reason I wanted to keep investing my energy in my career. And I, you know, and that was my start. I found that joy in it. And I found, yeah, just such a passion that is undeniable and that I wish I could turn off, but I can't. So that's, and then, you know, I left after casting after nearly 8 years, and then I moved over to McGregor Casting, who were also in Sydney. I was there for 2.5 years, nearly 3 years. And then I actually spent a year and a bit being an agent, and just to make sure that I think I had a bit of a midlife crisis, quarter life crisis actually, and I just sort of wanted to see if there was something out there that I hadn't tried that was more of a passion, and I loved it, but it didn't have the same joy as casting did. So now I'm back in casting, and I just think I'm going to be starting my own. I shouldn't say think. I need to be more like about it. I'm going to be starting my own business when I return to Australia. I'm in London, just sort of making connections, and I'm here with my partner while she works. And yeah, when I get back, I'll be starting my own company, which is I'm very excited and daunted about. And that's
That sounds brilliant, though. Absolutely brilliant. That will be in Sydney, will it?
It will be based in Sydney. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, I would like to say on the receiving end of those early years in 2012 at IFA Casting, you had such a vivacious go get 'em attitude that I was always excited to come into the room. So thank you.
Thank you, Monica. That means a lot. Yeah.
Coming to the office. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well done, Daisy. Chookers for the next chapter.
Oh, Maria, thank you, mate.
So let's start with the beginning. How does it all work? Mm-hmm. You receive a brief, you request actors, and agents submit actors. Can you walk us through the process?
Absolutely. And I will say I have worked across quite a few different mediums. So I've worked across a lot of advertising. I've worked across TV, film. I've done editorial, fashion stuff. I've done theatre and I've done musical theatre. And so each of those is incredibly different. There's so much that happens before I even get that brief. You know, some, you know, in terms of I'm out there making my own connections, I'm meeting with directors, I'm meeting with producers. Again, depending on the medium, I'm talking about the project, I'm putting my creative flair on it. A lot of the time I have to audition in a way myself, because they, you know, again, mostly for TV and film and for commercial musical theater and theater, there's quite a lengthy interview process and vetting process that happens. So that happens. But yeah, you're right. Like, we receive a brief. We've sort of had those conversations with directors and producers, so we know the parameters of what we can look for per role. And that, of course, is sometimes very much set in stone. Otherwise, there's some flexibility and some creative fun that I can have as a casting director in terms of, I know that you've told me that the brief should be this, but what if we throw a couple of the people that are like this into the brief, because I really believe in them and I think that the character is suited to them, and vice versa. So that happens. I put that brief out via a casting platform, or if I'm able to do an open call, that goes out on social media channels. Or one of my favorite parts about the job is what sort of used to be called street casting. Which would literally mean standing on the street handing out flyers for people to come in and audition, which I sometimes do. I've been to gymnastic schools, dance schools, painting schools, athletic clubs, handing out flyers for the most random jobs. But if it gives someone a job in front of a camera, I will do it. So we start that process, we brief it out, we review all of our applicants. Then the first round of casting happens, which of course is done via a self-tape, or it's done via an in-person audition, whether that be in a studio or in a massive audition room, sort of for more theatre or musical theatre. or if you're one of the gymnasts or athletes, it's on site at a gymnasium or athletics track. A 5 a.m. casting on an athletics track. I never thought I would see the day that I was on an athletics track at 5 a.m., but here we are. And then we review those first round auditions. I send everyone, most of the time it's everybody, to the director and the writers or whoever needs to have that first pass at it. We do callbacks. Sometimes the brief changes once they sort of, sometimes the script will change for whatever reason. A lot of things change. We do callbacks. Sometimes there are further callbacks. My sort of dream goal that I have when I start on a project is that no one has to audition more than 3 or 4 times from the first initial thing to their final callback. I think 4 is one too many, but sometimes it just happens that way, particularly on international projects that happens. But yeah, then we do the deal memos and we send the offers and all the fun stuff, and that's that.
Awesome. Thank you. That was super detailed. I love it. So how do actors get on your radar? Like, how do you find new talent apart from street casting? Like, let's say if we have people who have just graduated, apart from the school showcases, what else, what are the other ways that they can get seen, get known?
It's a great question. I'll only speak for myself as a casting director, because every casting director or company have their own ways that they like to be contacted and kept in the loop of things. My email address is sort of quite easy to find. I'm happy to share it if people don't have it or would. But I love when people send me their updated showreels. If they have new headshots, if they've got a show coming up and they'd like me to come along and see, that's been one of the tricky things about being in London for this little period, is I actually got like so many invites to see one particular show that I was devastated to be missing. And I was like, oh damn, like the universe is punishing me. But I love just people updating me. And I've always had that, you know, that willingness to review things. And when I was younger, I was also offering to sort of provide feedback and would take a lot of time to respond. And my therapist told me I need to set boundaries. So I love reviewing things, and I have a file with a lot of subfolders within that file in my email inbox. So I constantly am referring to that, particularly just to a lot of freelance actors, unrepresented actors reach out to me, which I love. And I love having a little log of those people, in case I have a brief that I can send to them. So that's how to stay on my radar, is just by keeping in touch. I think it's really important to keep your casting platforms updated. I think that that's really, really important, particularly, and of course, I know that I'll be the first person to acknowledge that we're in a cost of living crisis and those platforms can be expensive, but it is the first place that we look. I'm a big believer in finding ways to invest in those profiles.
Yeah. So moving on, it's the beginning of the year and there are many recent graduates looking for work without much experience, and some of them potentially without agents as well. What's some advice that you have?
What's some advice that I have? I think it is just don't rest on the fact that you have just graduated. I think that you need to stay out there. You need to be, you know, researching. I can't remember the name of it. Belvoir does it's not a lottery, but it's sort of like you'll have to forgive me, I don't remember the name of it. You can look it up on the Belvoir website, and it's like you pay $20 for a ticket.
Artist, yes. 25. Yep.
Artist, yeah. Registry. There we go. Yeah. So, you know, I think it's about, of course, again, acknowledging the cost of living crisis. Theatre tickets are incredibly expensive, but also supporting the arts is vital. And how do we keep those things happy? I think it's about meeting people, keeping yourself relevant to agents, to casting directors. You might have had a meeting with an agent and you weren't successful in getting representation, but if the agent told you to come back in 6 months, then set a reminder in your calendar. But don't just go back and say, hey, it's been 6 months, do you want to represent me yet? I think it says a lot about you as an artist, and I guess in a way as a business person as well, to be going out there, to be going to classes, doing workshops, updating your showreel, you know, grab a friend that you went to uni with, do a scene together in like a relatively, I mean, if someone, I mean, I'm in the bathroom of my apartment, and if someone sent me with this, I could make a coffee table book out of the sights I've seen from people's backgrounds in self-tapes. So, you know, as long as you're the main focus of the self-tape, I think it's great to be updating your materials and show us that you're willing to be working rather than waiting for the work to come to you.
Yeah. Good advice there. So when an actor walks into a casting room, what are you looking for? What's the best thing an actor can do when they come into a room?
Collaboration for me. I love when actors come in and they have questions about the character. They have questions about, you know, what the director's thinking. You know, they're willing to discuss. It's, you know, someone might come in and say, hey, it's kind of clear on the page what you guys are after, but I was thinking, like, you know, what if we did this? And what if it was this? And like, would you be so kind as to let me do a take where it's like this? And it's, you know, those questions, it's never a test. Audition should never be a test, but it is, excuse me, it's very much a, you know, it's lovely to, it's that age old saying where we say the best actor is never the person that gets the job. You know, it's not a test of who is the best actor. You are the best actor. You can do the job now. It's things like it's being able to say, you know, picking up the phone to the director before you send them the session and saying, hey, like, I'm about to send you some stuff. There's this one person who they did this thing where it was like really not what we were expecting and what we're wanting, but they were so engaging and really fun to have in the room. It's being able to tell, you know, and if you're auditioning for the lead in a TV series that has an option attached to it, that's like, that can be, you know, you're working with people for sometimes 6 to 8 months. And for me to be able to say to a director really confidently, like, that person was fun to have in the room, really professional, really collaborative, really switched on, like, that in itself is such a gift to be able to give to a director. So for me, it's about collaboration because it helps us get to know you as an actor as much as just, you know, seeing how you respond to the notes that we give. It's about conversation and collaboration for me.
Right. Yeah, I like that. Note to self. Thank you.
Oh, that one was for you then, Monica.
How free should the actor be in their interpretation of the scene that they've been given? Well, I think you pretty much nailed that one. That's about collaboration.
Totally. And
I was just going to say, in terms of like knowing the scene, like, you know, how tight are you with like knowing it word for word, or can it be a little loose?
That's a really great question. I'm totally aware that we all have lives, and the thing that I hate the most is when I see actors punishing themselves to be off book when they've just had to do, like, you know, a 9-hour hospo shift the night before and stuff like that. Like, I totally get it. Some people have got babies that were up all night crying. I get it. It's not a memory test. And I would rather people have the script in their hand and be off book, but committing to it 110% rather than not giving me any character choices because they're trying to be word perfect. Mm-hmm. If for whatever reason, I've never had a director before that has sort of been incredibly strict with me about lines, and, you know, that actor just didn't nail the lines. I think if it was maybe a callback that was being seen by the writers, I would make a note to the agent or to the actor. If they're a self-represented actor, I would make a note and make it quite clear that the writers would be reviewing it, and just out of respect to them, it's probably a good thing to kind of very much stick to the words. I just think that's a matter of respect from my point of view. But I've also had the privilege of working with writers who love collaboration as much as I do. And, you know, they then, you know, once an actor gets a job, I know that those writers have sat down with them and said, okay, so like, what does Vince say? Like, what, you know, what words would you use? Like, what do you think? So it becomes incredibly collaborative as well. So again, that's why that's very helpful. Mm. I would say in terms of freeness, I once had an actor come into the room and he just like, he hadn't bothered to look at this. It was for a TV commercial and it just had this thing. He was like, so what are we doing? And I was like, did you read the script that I sent in an email, attached it to casting? And I did this, did that. There's like five different ways you could have received the script, including the waiting room outside. He's like, no, you just tell me what to do. What do I say? What are we doing? And I was like, I'm working pretty hard already. Don't let me break it down for you then. Like, let's really, you know, but I think that I like to think if I'm going to the effort of writing character briefs, project synopsis, collaborating with my director to give you some really concise director's notes. I'm attaching mood boards. I'm doing X, Y, and Z. I think that at the very least, I'd love it if you at least looked at it and got a vague idea of what was going on. Is that a broad enough spectrum of what I need?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I mean, there's being prepared and then there's going in like an improv class. So yeah, I get you.
I mean, I love yes and, just not that much.
I'm going to jump over to auditioning for different genres. What sort of advice do you have that audition for all types of things? How do you keep true to that genre?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that, I guess, you know, if we consider the range to be, I guess, advertising to, say, musical theatre, I think that for starters, the best thing you can do if tonally you're not sure where to put it, I think the best thing you can do is either, if you're self-represented, contact the casting team directly or have your agent contact them and just say, hey, like a couple of questions about tone and where to pitch it. I think that, I mean, I personally love it when actors are, as much as, you know, as they do in the room, ask questions. I love it when people get in touch to ask questions about a self-tape because I have a level of having to let go and let God a little bit when I put out self-tape requests because I go, oh, I hope that was clear enough. And I hope that I've made myself clear enough so everyone can do their best work. So when people are worried about not being able to do their best work and they do get in touch, I love that. So that's one thing. But I think ingesting a lot of media is great in terms of I think auditioning for an Australian comedy series versus auditioning for an American drama series. Like I would be using different framing. I'd be using different like rhythmically. I mean, I know I'm preaching to the choir with all of these actors, but I think ingesting a lot of tone before you audition for that particular genre is a great way of getting yourself into that rhythm, but also observing things like framing. And I'd also pay attention to the director of those pieces, you know, particularly if it is a filmed medium. I would do a lot of that as well. I know that director really does a lot of close-ups in his stuff, and I won't go too close, but I will let him see like probably what he would like to see maybe in a callback. That's only going to help you. In terms of, say, auditioning for musical theatre, I know a lot of people ask me questions about musical theatre self-tapes. And the most important thing is when it comes to the singing part or the dancing part, I would say just find a space where you are comfortable enough, you have enough space to dance. That's the most important thing, but also a space where we can hear you clearly. Always do sound balances and sound tests and it helps us help you, because there's nothing worse than knowing that someone's gone to all of the effort of setting up a self-tape, putting, you know, probably doing take after take after take and then steaming and then resting and then tape to get that one take that we get sent. Sometimes we get sent two, just to be able to say, babe, couldn't hear over the sound of your music, you know. It's so I guess there's a lot of trial and error in terms of testing your equipment and the space before you actually commit to taping. In terms of performance size, I always suggest to people who are taping for theatre or musical theatre to use quite a loose frame. I'd rather see, I guess, from the top of the head to maybe your knees, use the space as you would. I know I find it quite jarring to watch musical theatre self-tapes when it's in this kind of frame. I like to be able to see how people breathe and and how they're using their body and stuff like that. And it also is a little cheat for you as an actor, because I think the tendency is to play things bigger because it's musical, it's theater, it's musical theater. We're in our bodies, we're using it, we have permission to use our bodies more. So when you are using a wider frame, it's a lot less that we're seeing in terms of, if I'm giving you defying gravity from here, no one wants to see or hear that. But if I'm giving you defying gravity from back there, it's a lot more palatable and lovely on the ears, I must say. So that would be my suggestion, is finding the space and making the space work for you.
Okay, great. Awesome. And what about in terms of actors using, so if we just jump genre back to film and TV or even commercials, how do you feel about people using costume and makeup and props in self-tapes?
I love it. Yeah. It's a little bit funny to me sometimes when people are taping at home and, you know, like they're watching TV and or they're, you know, acting that they're watching TV, and they go to pick up the remote and they're just miming it. And it's like, do you not have it, like, it's just funny. It's funny to me, but it's also a little bit distracting. I'm like, I'm not even watching you act. Damn it, I'm laughing about you. Where's your remote? I mean, to be fair, where's my remote? But I think that props, costume, it just helps. I think especially when, you know, if it's a little nod to the character and the genre, I think that that's perfect. I think if you're auditioning for a horror film, and, you know, I just think whatever helps you get into that space, then go for it. I think nods to the character are great. I know we're talking about TV and film. I'm certainly not suggesting that you rock up to an audition for Cinderella in a full ball gown and crown and glass slipper. But I just think little things where I think for any person who wears makeup, whether it be as a character choice or for, I don't want to say vanity reasons, that's kind of a weird thing to say, but like just because it makes you feel good, I would say keep it nice and natural, unless, again, you're really pushing it towards a character choice. Mm. Otherwise, yeah, just keep it comfy. If you're taping from here, have your pajama bottoms downstairs. We all do it. I'm wearing jeans. I wish I was wearing my pajamas, but I'm wearing my jeans. But yeah, does that answer that question?
Yeah, it does. It does. Thank you. Right. What are essentials for a successful self-tape?
Mm.
You've talked about sound and space specifically for theatre. What else is there? Mm-hmm.
Great question. If I can see you and I can hear you and I'm not totally distracted by what's in the background of your tape, I reckon we're good. That's it for me. I really... I know there are some casting directors who really like it, you know, a blue background, a plain wall, take the pictures off the wall, you know, don't have your mirror up on the wall, take that down. I don't want to be distracted by anything. I'm fine, babe. I'm a millennial. I'm multitasking pro. So, you know, if it is just you in front of that screen, that's fine. I personally don't believe that actors need to go to the extent of paying, you know, $50 for a blue screen from Amazon. I don't think you need I kind of want to show you because I think it's hilarious. I've got my MacBook on a towel on the basin of my bathroom. And if I was doing a Zoom audition with someone who was using this kind of frame and I could see them and hear them, be totally happy. I mean, yeah, COVID was just Zoom tests like this. And yeah, I think it's great. I think it is a very valuable investment to get a great tripod that's not going to give you a nervous breakdown every time because the little thing breaks off. I think if you want to go and spend $90 on a tripod, it's going to last you a very long time. And I'm not an accountant, but I believe that can be given, that receipt can be given to your accountant. I don't know. Don't give it to me. But there are plenty. Yeah, I'll show you guys. I've got a little, oh my God, got my little towel and the, it's a whole setup here, but I think I look good and that's what matters. So yeah, if I can see you and hear you and, you know, your cat's not spewing in the background, I reckon we're okay. I've seen it all.
So that means lighting and sound are super, super important so that the camera
Totally.
doesn't make it grainy. And I have had a,
That's correct.
I've had a self-tape where I shot in natural light in the afternoon. And because we were going so slowly with the take, trying to keep the
You
words
can
in,
see the sun, you're
the sun
losing
was
light.
dropping.
Yeah.
And then when I finally sent it off, my agent
I've
said,
seen that too.
"We can't see you because it's all grainy. So you're gonna have to shoot it again." So I'm like,
Yeah.
"Great, here we go again." So yeah, probably lighting is a really important one to make sure that it doesn't disappear on you. And
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've seen
so
that a million times.
what are the commonalities you see in actors or their performances that win the roles?
I would say commonality, I think, is actually what is uncommon about them. It's a really, I don't want to say overused because it is actually the truth, but the thing I see the most is that people are just being really true to themselves and true to their choices as an actor. It's a very fine line, and it's people who can really find that sort of that perfect Venn diagram moment of here's what I believe this character is, who they are, what I bring to them. This is how I want to, if it's a musical, are you going to be able to do this 8 shows a week for sometimes a year, sometimes longer? Are you really going to be able to do that and sustain that? Or if this is a TV series, is this the character that you're going to want to be playing, getting out of hair and makeup at 4 a.m. and racing to set and doing a 10-hour shoot day as that character? It's people who are just fully committed and bringing themselves to the character in a way that only they can. And that's the thing that ultimately wins the job. It's the thing that if I've asked 20 people to audition for a role, I would say that for the most part, somewhere between 10 and 15 people will give me very much like ticking the boxes of everything that I've sort of, in my role breakdown, everything I've said that character is, they've given me that. And they're, beautiful acting, like very good actors, they've done everything I've asked them to do. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's great work. I'm so appreciative of that. But the things that stand out, those people that sort of, when I'm putting people in the order that I want the director to watch them in, the people that I tend to, that I personally get excited about are the people that have either gone not totally off the rails, but they're people who have gone, do you know what it'd be like? Do you know what I want to do with this? I want to do this. I don't think I'll be expecting it, but I love that. I'm going to do this. Or I did a weird take with my friend just to get it out of my system. And I actually think I really like that. Like, that's the stuff that ends up, getting a little gold star from me.
And so you said you have a particular order. Is that from the outset as well? So from the very first submission of your actors to the director, is there a particular order where you go, "These are my top 10," or you just go, "This is more of a general sort of wash," and then when we get to callbacks, then it's very, very specific, as in, "This is my first, second choice, the choice, etc.?"
Yeah, that's a great question. It depends on the director for me. I know that I have one director that I work with in particular will call me once they've reviewed the full session. It doesn't matter what order I put them in, because we'll spend 5, sometimes longer minutes talking about each of those actors in detail. And what did I think of that actor? What my director thought of that actor? What are, the people above both of us going, producers, advertising, whatever the meeting is, what are they going to think about it? We have really in-depth conversations. So it does for, I know for that director, it doesn't matter what order I put the actors in. There are some directors who I know, I am a really firm believer in not wasting actors' time. I will never ask more actors to audition than I know my director will want to see. I know that if my director says, "Babe, I'm halfway through block two. I don't have enough time to look at X, Y, and Z. Can you just maybe send me five people that you think will smash it?" I'll request maybe seven people in case that two of those actors have become unavailable or they might not want to do that role. And I will only send my director the amount of, you know, I'm not going to send that director 20. I know that they're not going to look at it. So it really does vary. There are some times where I might be particularly passionate about one or two performers for a certain reason, and I'll just put those at the top of the pile so my director doesn't have to, you know, I know who an actor is by looking at a thumbnail, whereas my director has to, who might not know these actors, has to search for the names. So I'll put them, I'll reorder them and put them at the top of the list.
Right.
So it varies per director.
That's good. I didn't know any of that, so that's very good to know. Thank you.
There
I wanted to ask also about when we're self-taping at home, sometimes we get in our heads as like we're just in this sort of void that you're just acting by yourself, or you're acting with a friend, a reader, and you still don't know what the director or the casting people want. You're kind of just stuck. So how many versions do you send, and how different should they be?
Great question. Again, different per medium. I for a TV commercial, and again, I'm a really firm believer in not wasting actors' time. If an actor came in the room with me, I would usually get three takes per scene, unless it was a tiny little scene where I know I only needed to hit one beat in that the director wants to see. And I know that some actors prefer to come in person and audition and have me sort of, I guess, curate that experience in a way. Whereas if people are self-taping, I don't want actors to have to be like, well, I was really happy with that one take I did, and now the casting director is asking me to do two more takes. That's so, you know, and I'm aware of that. Like that's a lot of time. And I think it's incredibly hard because you as an actor are then having to sort of self-analyze your own work and make sure it is the right take. But I don't believe that there's any reason, unless it was an incredibly specific role or project, I don't believe that there is any reason an actor should need to do more than four takes for a scene. Therefore, if an actor wanted three takes because they really believed that those three takes were different enough for me to see different choices and interpretations of the scene, I'm happy to watch them. I might watch each of those three scenes and go, do you know what? Those two are so, like, that's great. This one was a bit similar to this one. I don't need that one. I'm just going to get my director to watch these two takes of that scene. There are some agents who really like to only send one or two takes. So I guess I would always sort of defer to the agent in the first instance.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know a lot of agents do watch their clients' self-tapes for whatever reason. Quality control, I guess. But ultimately, if for whatever reason I need more than one take, I will always stipulate that and why I need that. Otherwise, I will. I'm happy to be led by the actor on what they can afford to give me.
Great, awesome, thank you. What is the best format to send these to you?
Vimeo or via Showcast. I was getting really hesitant to click on Hightail or WeTransfer or Google Drive links. I always just get a bit like, is it a virus? I didn't get like virus protection for my computer. Maybe I should have. I always personally just get hesitant about that. Something like Vimeo or YouTube if you want to. But the reason I like Vimeo is because you can usually download them. So if I, for whatever reason, I'm doing a pass on a role and I, you know, someone has sent me something and it's on Vimeo, I can just download that, then re-upload it to whatever platform I'm using, probably Altai, and then send that. And then, I mean, the actor doesn't know I've done that, but it's really helpful for me to be like, hey, like, I know we're doing this role. How about this person as an idea? Like, here's this person. I've asked a bunch of people to audition, but I forgot about that person, and I'll just throw in that tape they sent me because it's very them and that sort of thing. So for sending materials to me personally, I like it to be Vimeo, YouTube, or via Showcast are my preferred ones.
Okay, great. Thank you. There is a question in the chat that I am also very interested in knowing about. And that's like, it's about being like, if you're an established actor, been in the biz for say 20 years, and you get guesties on dramas, on what have you, how do you get to be seen to be a lead actor?
That's an awesome question. I think for starters, I think that that is sort of giving a kind of, in that there's certainly been, from what you're explaining, like, you know, you're someone who's shown like consistency and discipline and that sort of thing. And I think that having that level of trust in an actor is really important. I mean, I know that there are lots of actors who, when I first started in casting TV commercials, I'd be seeing, because all I did sort of exclusively was TV commercials for the first part of my career. And then when I started moving into longer form, I was sort of like, hey, like that actor's like always like lovely in the room and really consistent and this sort of thing. I never see that person on TV. I want to give that person a go. So for me personally, that's something that I really believe in is giving opportunities to people who just have that consistency and have that potential to do something bigger. But another way of, rather than just, I guess, putting coins in the bank by doing great auditions, it's about sort of saying like, hey, casting director, you might know me from that Toyota commercial and the eating a cheeseburger commercial that I did for you that time, but I spent some time with a friend last weekend doing a self-tape that I'm really proud of. I'd love for you to look at that and to consider me for something in a longer form. I'm so open to that. And it's showing us that, like, one, you're really interested in that type of thing. And you're also, you know, like you're giving us what you would be giving us if we did ask you to audition. Like, it's wonderful to sort of, and again, me being able to have access to that and having that on file is such a great way of being like, of just keeping stuff. I have a bit of a Rolodex in my brain. So it's really great for me to be seeing that and to get an understanding of how you would interpret a character, not just, hey, I did some good acting and I would like you to remember that I'm a good actor. Like, I'll do that anyway. But it's about like, hey, I'm just really passionate about characters like this. But then I also really like doing funny scenes, you know, like here's some stuff that I've done recently. I love just being kept up to date on things, on work that actors are proud of and really willing to put their name to. That's all I can really say to that one.
Mm. Good advice. So it's been quite proactive in a way.
Yes. I think that proactive is the way to be. And I could be a little bit biased because that's how I had to get ahead in my career. I didn't really just sort of sit back and wait for the opportunities to come to me. I was really out there, you know, how to win directors as a casting director, sort of typing that into Google almost, you know. It was really, I guess, hustling in that regard.
Mm. And so on hustling, how much do you think this business is about networking and hustling, and how much is it about just having talent?
Oh, I'm terrible at maths. So I can't give you the percentage breakdown of that. A really big part of it is about networking. And again, I think I'm possibly speaking from my own experience, but I went out there, I went to industry gatherings. I tagged along with friends as a plus one to opening nights until I started being invited to opening nights. And it's really just about finding those little pathways in to meet people. And, you know, I personally am just, I do respect the hustle. That's at the end of the day, I think that's, it's really important to acknowledge that it is we're all working in a really tough industry. I'm just a gal from Dubbo, New South Wales. And I really just wanted to work in this industry, and I didn't know how. I didn't have any connections, and I personally am just a really big believer in kindness is free, and being able to help people if that's something you can do is free, and it's nice, and it just doesn't hurt you to be kind and to give people opportunities. And so I personally just, yeah, I respect the hustle, and I do think that if we're going to break it down, I'd say it's like 33.33% of each of those things. I think it's talent, drive, and networking. Yeah.
Very good. So then when it comes to hustling, what are your top three tips to hustle? Are you literally, like, how do you talk to someone? How do you network? In a room full of people, like, there are lots of actors I know who just shun going to opening nights. Just they're not interested in doing that. So how do you start a conversation? Do you just start talking about yourself, or what are the do's?
I mean, that's such a great question. And I think we're all just out here hustling at the end of the day, aren't we? I have to do it. I still have to do it. And the way that I do it is I will usually introduce myself and my work over email to that person, or to a person that might be able to connect me to that person. And then if I do see that person in a foyer somewhere, you know, I never do the thing, because it's happened to me before, and it's mortifying. And someone's like, yeah, I emailed you and you never emailed me back. But this is me. And it's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Like, it's so nice to meet you. And I'm terrified of you now. But I'm sorry. How can I possibly make it up to you? But I just think it's really about just, like, politely introducing yourself, and maybe saying that, like, the opportunity to meet with them or to connect with them in a long form way would be really lovely. And you know, you'd love to be in touch sometime soon if that's something that they're open to. It's that's what I, you know, I would go up to someone, I'd introduce myself, I'd say, this is, hello, I'm me, this is who I am, this is my job. It'd be great if we could connect sometime, if that's something that if your schedule allows it. You know, I can send you an email or send someone an email. It'd be great, you know. And I would say 90% of the time I have people being like, oh, it's a very Australian, it's very un-Australian to network. I think in America, for anyone that's done the hustle of LA or New York, it's very like, hey, like, I'm the best goddamn actor you're ever gonna meet. It's lovely to meet you. Anyway, here's Defying Gravity. Like, it's really like, it's, I think as an Australian, we find it quite intense to even be like, hey, like, I'm a person and I've got a job and I'm pretty good at it. But I think it's that level of commitment to just being like, hey, I'm a person, I exist, I really like you and your work. I would love to connect. Finding the way to do that in a way that you feel comfortable with. That is how I would do it. Never had someone ask me how to hustle, so I hope that wasn't unhelpful.
No, very good. There are some questions.
Great, I'll write a book on it then.
Yeah, I think you should. There are some questions in the chat here, and I wanted to ask you if you wanted to ask yourself.
Oh my God, there are so many. I was really on do not disturb mode, wasn't I? Jeez. Do you want to pick them out, Monica? And
okay, so we have.
It's Alex here. Just one person at the very beginning just asked about how you get that first one to get the one liner. We've got a few, so that'll just be a short question. But sort of moving into the just getting the start of the one liner. They've been in the industry for a while to get your attention.
I guess it's that same thing. As I sort of, I mean, moving from just to get a one liner. I knowing that someone, if someone sends me a scene, I know that they can, you know, give me one line, let alone many lines strung together. I would just say, keep your materials updated and keep putting them in front of people is what I would say to that.
Do you mind when represented artists contact you direct, or do you prefer the communication about tapes and updates to remain between you and the agent?
Out of respect to agents, I generally prefer actors to communicate. If I've asked an actor to do a tape or an audition for me and they are represented, I would prefer that communication stays between myself and the agent. That's the agent's job, and it's very important for the agent to be across those conversations. And if an actor does reach out to me directly, I will usually loop the agent in. I just prefer that communication is happening. But otherwise, if an actor is represented Again, I would always check in if you are an actor with an agent, always check in with them about if they mind that you are sending self-tapes out. Because again, I know a lot of agents just like to know what is being sent out to who. I know that that's very, very important. So I would always defer, I would always suggest to actors that they send out the tape to their agent before sending it out to casting directors or anyone.
Cool.
Yeah.
The next one is from Stephen. I'm an old school actor who spent years developing and engaging in great in-person casting technique, working the room, having fun, taking notes, giving varied, compelling performances, usually with reasonable success conversion rate. But I struggle terribly with self-tapes. I feel all my casting skills and tools are stripped away and I'm back to being a shambling amateur making a terrible pretend you're a tree drama school impro. On top of that, as a lifelong performer with decades of experience and an eye for professional presentation, self-tapes always look crap, no matter how much time, effort, preparation, and full of skill you throw at it. Accordingly, I seem to fall by the wayside since self-tapes have become the norm and I can no longer get into the casting room in person to do my thing. Suggestions on all of this? Ideas.
That's great. I mean, it's something not great. I'm sorry to hear that you're really struggling, but I really appreciate you bringing this up. That's great, Stephen. It's not great. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry that you're having a hard time. I guess my question, Stephen, would be, has a casting director, a producer, a director, an agent, they told you directly that you're bad at it? Because I think that as creatives, we really, we are our hardest, critics. And I think that, you know, if someone has told you that you are bad at it, I would then ask them for feedback. I would really just maybe zoom out a little bit and take the pressure off yourself. If you, you're saying there that like you're really confident in your in-person skills, and I think perhaps it's worth just zooming out and addressing, you know, why you have those skills in the first place. You have to be a pretty competent actor or you know person in this industry to be able to develop that skill set that you're talking about. So I think it's zooming out and trusting that those things are shining through. The shambling amateur making a terrible pretend you're a tree drama school impro. I can't really speak to that because I normally when I'm doing, particularly for TV commercials, in fact, only when I'm doing TV commercials, I will usually film myself doing the blocking of what I would like the actor to do, because I would do that in the room. I think that if that hasn't been provided for you, I don't think it could hurt to ask for that. Again, I think that if you're not getting feedback, it can't hurt to ask for it, whether that be, if you have an agent asking them to ask for that feedback or asking your agent for their feedback, because it is hard. I know that sometimes feedback is hard to come by, but I think if you are really asking for it and pushing for it, reassurance as well. I think I'm not sure if that sort of fully answers your question other than just trying to get a bit more communication out of the people who are equipped to tell you whether or not your work is bad, if that helps. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Daisy. I think that's all we have time for right now. And let Daisy head off to bed because it is late in the evening.
Past 12 o'clock. So that's a very special thank you to Daisy because it's a very late night. So thank you so much for this. Really appreciate it. And Monica, who is the wonderful supporter of the Equity Foundation, and I really appreciate all her support and all her wonderful work in supporting all of you and all of us. So thank you so much. It's a wonderful opportunity to talk to casting directors. So we really can't say thank you enough. And thank you again to Media Super, of course, and to all you participants who came on board today. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast, brought to you by our principal sponsor, Media Super, and the Equity Foundation. For more information about the work we do, visit equityfoundation.org.au or follow Equity Foundation Australia on Facebook and Instagram.